Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Speedy Digest. As we should have a great show this evening. And Glenn, how you doing?
Hello there. I'm doing just fine. I didn't know we were going to start the show a few minutes early, but hey, that's all right. Here I am, and not bad. Just trying to beat the heat here in good old Southern California.
Yeah, and actually what happened was someone forgot to move the show up, and I guess that's why it just started.
Nothing like keeping us on our toes.
Yeah, I was like, what? I didn't expect to start this early, but anyway, we're online, and, it was a fantastic weekend this weekend, and, I don't know, Glenn, how was your weekend, and talk about some of the racing and all that stuff that you enjoy while we kind of wait for Joseph here.
Well, my weekend was packed, pretty busy, because I was out there twirling the signs for Giant RV, and so I didn't really get a good chance to see any of the races. I did get a chance to see some of the highlights. I got inside updates. Thank you all for doing that from many different sources, including Twitter. And so I pretty much got the weekend in like bits and pieces. And then finally, when I was able to kind of relax on Monday and Tuesday, I could go back in and see what the heck happened. So we'll definitely talk more about it a little bit later on in the show. But really, two of the races had some really amazing winners, and there was a couple that I'm surprised didn't turn to a wreck fest.
Yeah, I was too. I thought the Iowa Speedway race was awesome, as well as the Can-Am Pro Series, which I'm actually thinking about maybe possibly doing some of the Can-Am Pro Series races and reviewing them on here for the ones that we cover at the track, but I thought the racing in Iowa was fantastic for both series. It's kind of everywhere. And, I don't like staying in one spot. I like roaming around the area and taking in all the different things. I was taking pictures for Speedway Digest. I even have a Vine now that I have linked to my Twitter that went and caught some sights and sounds from the weekend, and I posted up there from the Can-Am race. For a Nationwide Series race, I was too busy, going around everywhere that I couldn't really take no Vines. I apologize for that, but I hope people enjoyed my tweets from over the weekend, and it was certainly fun, and can't wait until next year.
That's pretty cool. I definitely did go back to retweet some of your tweets, and you definitely seem like that you're having a good time, and also you did a fine job of recording everything.
Yeah, well, thank you, and I certainly enjoyed doing it, and hope everyone else enjoyed it. All right, well, Kyle's not going to be joining us tonight, and we just have Joseph coming on here pretty soon, but we're going to go ahead and review the ARCA Racing Series race from this past weekend and talk about one news topic that's been going on over there. So we're going to kind of get started as we kind of get on our pre-show right there, and so we're going to get started here. Justin Allison captured his first career victory in the ARCA Racing Series race this weekend after leading only 11 total laps. This win marked his fifth top five finish and 9 career starts. Allison started the event from the fifth starting spot, which was his fifth top 10 start of the year. Will Kimmel finished second. This marked his second top five finish in a row after a fourth place finish at Chicagoland Speedway last week. This is his fourth top 10 and third top five of 2014. Kimmel finished 0.4 seconds behind the race winner. This is the first time he's finished second in the ARCA Racing Series event since Salem in 2011. Finishing third was Tom Hessard as he scored his ninth top 10 finish of the 2014 season. This was the fifth time this season he has finished inside the top 10. The finish marked his best since Elko Speedway earlier this year. Third race in a row that he's finished inside the top 10. Rest of the finishing order from 4th on 31st, as only 31 cars made the race, was Brennan Poole. Finishing 5th was Justin Boston. 6th, Nick Igowski. 7th, Mason Mitchell. 8th was Austin Lane South. 9th, Cody Coughlin. And 10th was Michael Lira. Finishing 11th was Roger Carter. 12th, Carl Weber. 13th, Ed Pompa. 14th, Mike Alfarano. Finishing 15th was Tom Burt. 16th, Thomas Prater. 17th, James Swanson. 18th, Bill Campiana. Finishing 19th was Brad Smith. 20th was Frank Kimmel. And 21st was Brian Colbier. Finishing 22nd was Matt Tiff. 23rd, Bobby Gerhart. 24th, Don Thompson. 25th, Tim Vines. 26th, St. Grant Infinger. 27th, B.J. McLeod, which filled in for John West Townley, who was injured in a crash, and we have an update coming up here pretty soon in our ARCA topic. Finishing 28th was Kyle Markell. 29th, Brent Cross. 30th, Evan Pardo. And 31st was Wayne Peterson. The pole sitter was won by Mason Mitchell after posting a time and speed of 53.284 seconds, 168.906 miles per hour. The margin of victory was 0.384 seconds. As we said earlier, there was two cautions for 15 laps under yellow. The time of the race was 1 hour, 1 minute, and 31 seconds. The average speed was 121.918 miles per hour. So I don't know if you saw this race, Glenn, and I was too busy doing stuff around the Iowa Speedway, but if you did, from some of the things that you saw, what did you think of it?
You know what? I actually did see the race itself. For one thing, I am so happy for Justin Allison. I mean, you know, he's the grandson of Donnie Allison, and he is really starting to become a good ARCA driver. I mean, it's great to see an Allison back in victory lane. And I think that if he continues to do well and keep raking in more wins, I would not be surprised if we see Justin Allison bump his way up into either the Truck Series or Nationwide or, you know, somewhere down the road. I mean, I'm going to keep my eye on him because he could possibly give drivers like Chase Biase and who's the other guy I'm thinking of? God, I'm blanking on the name. Who is it? Chris Buescher, a run for their money.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, you know, he's been strong here lately in the ARCA Racing Series. You know, he's kind of had his up and downs. He's only ran, I think, 8 races this season out of 12 or so. But, you know, I think he's definitely one of those drivers who deserve to move on. And, you know, I think, you know, after he runs, I think he needs a full season ARCA, though, before moving over to NASCAR. But, you know, I think he would do fairly well over in the truck. And so it'll be interesting to see where he moves on. Our next topic, which is our only one for ARCA Racing Series, is that Brennan Poole will replace John West Townley for their next race, which is set this weekend at Berlin Raceway. And John West Townley was suffered in a crash this weekend at Pocono during qualifying. I know that from what I heard, Fox Sports did not have a good angle of it or couldn't show it all, but you know, hopefully he gets a full recovery and is back in the series soon. Clint Boyer replaced him in his number 05 truck this past weekend at Pocono in the NASCAR Camel Truck Series and drove to a 4th place finish, I believe. Yeah, so you know, pretty bad news over there. And hopefully John Lestelli gets better. But Venturing Motorsports team said that he was in good health and spirits and wanted to sit this weekend out as a precautionary measure. So now, did you want to give any thoughts, Glenn, on John Lestelli being out this weekend at Berlin Raceway?
Yeah, actually, you know what? I want to go back to qualifying really quickly, because when they showed qualifying highlights, the number three car that was in the race, Carl Weber, pretty much had the worst wreck. If you look at John Lestelli's wreck, it doesn't look that bad. But you have to remember, you know, this is not the COT that, you know, NASCAR has, or had, I should say. This is the old-style 2006 spec car where it doesn't have the foam in there. But I'm very surprised that hit was hard enough that it's going to you know, pound me out of the car.
Yeah, and they didn't show a good angle. I think he hit the end of a wall or something like that, but it wasn't a very good angle of it, because track speed, whenever they have NASCAR 10 World Truck Series practice and such that isn't being televised, they just go by the front stretch camera that can zoom in all the way and can monitor all the way around the track. So that's why there wasn't a good camera angle of it. All right, we're going to move into NASCAR 10 World Truck Series for the Pocono Mountains 150 on Saturday, August 2nd, which was the day before my birthday, for those wondering about that. Austin Daly captured the victory after leading 23 total laps and led a total of three different times. Finishing in second was John Sauter, third Joey Coulter, fourth Clint Bowyer, fifth Ryan Blaney, sixth Eric Jones, seventh Ron Hornaday Jr., eighth Darrell Wallace Jr., ninth was Justin Lofton, and 10th was Joe Nemechek. 11th was Jason White, 12th Timothy Peters, 13th Dane Kennedy, 14th Matt Crafton, 15th Spencer Gallagher, 16th was Jeb Burton, 17th was Mason Mingus, 18th was Kyle Larson, 19th was Ryan Ellis, and 20th was Norm Benning. 21st was Brian Silas, 22nd Herman Carrera, 23rd Tyler Reddick, 24th Jennifer Jo Cobb, 25th Todd Tech, 26th Tyler Young, 27th Kyle Martell, 28th was Ray Black Jr., 29th TJ Bell, and 30th was DJ McLeod. Finishing 31st was Taylor Ward, and 32nd was Justin James. The time of race was 1 hour, 19 minutes, and 6 seconds. The average speed was 121.365 miles per hour. The margin of victory was 1.975 seconds. There was 10 lane changes among 7 different drivers, and here is your point standing. Going into this weekend off for the track, Ryan Blaney currently leads with Johnny Sauter in second. Matt Crafton rides third, fourth Ron Hornaday Jr., fifth Darrell Wallace Jr., 6th, Herman Carrera, 7th, Dane Kennedy, 8th, Timothy Peters, 9th, Joey Coulter, and 10th, Jeb Burton. And I don't know if you watched this race or not, Glenn, but if you did, or from the updates that you saw of it, what did you think?
Well, this was one of the races that I did not see over the weekend, but I did get the updates, and I'm very happy for Austin Dillon. I'll tell you one thing, the Dillon kids are on a roll, and, you know, here's something else that's kind of interesting. The night before the race, we were all kind of complaining about, you know, Kyle Larson being there, and we found out he's on the pole, and we figured, okay, he's going to lead everything and all that, and then all of a sudden he dropped a cylinder near the end of the race, so now it opens up the field to everybody. And so seeing Austin Dillon win in that black and cream colored number three, that was just fantastic for him. I'm happy that he won, and I don't know, he could end up winning again before the season's out.
Yeah, and you know, it was certainly interesting to hear, you know, some of the stuff that went on, like the number 19 truck of, I believe, Tyler Reddick was parked by NASCAR. And I'm not sure on that. I'll have to look into that. I didn't even know that until I watched Race Hub earlier today. But, you know, some interesting stuff, I guess, happened in that race. And one of our news topics tonight for the NASCAR World Truck Series is that two teams suffered penalties this past weekend at Pocono, and those are being Timothy Peters and Nolan Benning. First of all, the number 17 team was penalized for violations of Section 12-1 and 20B-5.10.16 for a throttle shaft. And as a result, crew chief Paul Richmond was fined $7,500 and placed on NASCAR probation until December 31st. The number 6 team of Nolan Benning was penalized for rules violations, which was a P1 infraction for actions detrimental stock car racing in 9-15J. Only two NASCAR approved 1/2-inch drive air wrenches with a single socket and a hex design capable of removing or attaching one lug nut at a time must be used to change tire slash wheels on any pit stop. And so that's that. And the team is penalized with loss of track time during the opening practice at Michigan International Speedway on August 15th. So interesting right there is that's the first P1 infraction of this new penalty system. Glenn, your thoughts?
Well, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, how the penalty system works. And, you know, right now, I'm kind of up in the air with that penalty. I don't agree with it, but I also don't disagree with it, you know.
Good point. No, I think it's kind of an interesting one. That one's not really one that we hear all. My last topic in the NASCAR Camp World Truck Series is Dustin Boston, is planning on making his NASCAR Camp World Truck Series debut at Bristol with Venturing Motorsports, which he confirmed on Twitter. So they also will plan on running Texas, Phoenix, and Homestead later on this year. So interesting right there. Glenn, do you have any comments?
I don't think I really have too many comments on that one.
All right. And now we're going to get into the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series stuff from Iowa Speedway this weekend, which saw one fantastic race. And the race was pretty much dominated all by Brad Keselowski in the U.S. Cellular 250 presented by New Holland for the sixth annual event. Keselowski led a total of 4 different times for 146 laps, so nearly over half of the race. Finishing in second with an incredible finish is Michael McDowell. Third was Trevor Bayne. Fourth, Sam Horns Jr. Fifth, Ty Dillon. Sixth, Ryan Smith, I don't know why I did that. Finishing in seventh was Brian Scott, eighth Chase Elliott, ninth Dylan Kwasniewski, and tenth was Elliott Sadler. 11th was Brennan Gaughan, 12th Josh Berry in his NASCAR Nationwide Series debate, 13th Landon Castle, 14th Chris Buescher, 15th Ryan Reed, 16th Mike Bliss, 17th J.J. Yaley, 18th Chase DeStone, 19th Danny Wallace, and 20th was Ryan Sieg. 21st Dakota Armstrong, 22nd Chad Boat, 23rd Eric McCord, 24th Joey Gaze, 25th Jeremy Clements, 26th James Buescher, 27th Jimmy Dick, 28th Hal Martin, 29th Kevin Swindell, and 30th was Matt Debonetto. 31st Jeffrey Earnhardt, 32nd Carl Long, 33rd Josh Renoon, 34, Gary Cope. 35, Tanner Berryhill. 36, Morgan Shepherd. 37, Sean Jackson. 38, Blake Cook. 39, Mike Harmon. And 40th, Matt Fromm. The race was 2 hours, 2 minutes, 29 seconds. The average speed was 106.867 miles per hour. The margin of victory was 0.88. There was 5 cautions for 29 laps under yellow, and there was 8 lead changes among 5 different drivers. The point standings look like this, as Chase Elliott leads by only 2 points over his teammate, Reagan Smith, who sits second. Third, Elliott Sadler. Ty Dillon sits fourth, but them two drivers are tied. The fifth and sixth place drivers are also tied at Trevor Bayne and Brian Scott, and then Chris Buescher, Brendan Gaughan, Ryan Reed, and James Buescher rounds out the top 10. So it was a very interesting NASCAR Nationwide Series race from Iowa, and Glenn, if you were following tweets from this race or updates, so what was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was definitely watching the Nationwide Series race and also following it as well. I thought it was a really good race, and you know, a great battle between Sam Harris Jr. and Brad Keselowski. And really, it was kind of the reverse of what we saw earlier this year with Hornish going to victory lane and Keselowski finishing second. But yeah, the racing was definitely really good. Chase the ace, you know, leading the point standings, that's great for him. But also we have the road courses here. I mean, we have two road courses back-to-back, Watkins Glen and Mid-Ohio. It's going to be interesting to see if Chase Elliott can keep the points lead here, because I consider the two road course races, especially for the Nationwide Series, to be wild cards.
Oh, no doubt. You know, I think it's definitely going to be interesting this weekend as well. All right, and now we're going to head into our NASCAR Nationwide Series news. Just like there was in NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, there was one team penalized, and that was the number 23 over in NASCAR Nationwide Series for a P3-level penalty for violating Section 12-1 and 28-2.3.3a for any weight added to the car must be bolted inside the body and shell and in approved weight container and in a position acceptable enough to our officials as it was not properly attached. The result of violation has crew chief Jonas Bell fined $10,000 and placed on NASCAR probation until December 31st. Glenn, your thoughts? Are you with us?
Oh, there you are. You broke down. You broke down big time. All right. So the 23 penalized. You know, what can you say? Except, you know, trying to get things going here. But any weight added to the car, yeah, it definitely needs to be bolted. Otherwise, it's going to be shifting around in there and screwing up very soon.
Yo, Osai.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. We're just now discussing about the penalty handed down over in the NASCAR Nationwide Series. I'm sure you heard about it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I actually think that Timothy Peters' penalty is bigger on the Truck Series. Not as they're a Pocono. Even with the penalty, the team did see they were pretty happy going around the garage area. I spent a little time with Yermont Kuroga this weekend, and just saw the entire Red Horse Racing team. They're very optimistic about the future, even with this penalty. But Timothy Peters is struggling a little bit lately, and I think this is going to kill their confidence a little bit. But in another way, it could also make them want to win more. So that could be something to look out for in the next few weeks.
All right. And as Joseph mentioned that, we talked about that a little bit earlier tonight. Our next topic is Mocha Duno to run some NASCAR Nationwide Series races for Round Racing, which you know, it's pretty interesting, and a lot of people buzzing on Twitter about this. Well, I'm going to start with Yosai, since he just joined us, and ask him about his thoughts on it.
I think this is flat out for publicity. She's going to be the first Latina woman to race in a nationwide series, and that's literally the only reason why RAB Racing was hired her for the multiple races. No one even knows when she's going to run, but when she does, she will not run well at all. Even in the top equipment in the ARCA series, Venturini Motorsports, the team that wins races nearly every single week, this woman got three top tens in her whole entire ARCA career and over 40 starts. And those top tens, only one of them she finished on the lead lap, and that was her a road course where she finished 10th. Her bread and butter.
Glenn?
You know what? I actually disagree with him. I think that the Milka Duno coming into the Nationwide series is really not a bad idea. And, yeah, she had some success in ARCA. Heck, she would finish 7th in the point standing, in the driver standing. So I'm interested to see, you know, how well she does. I mean, yeah, everybody doesn't like her because, you know, in IndyCar she was quite slow, but that was because, you know, Dale Coyne was underpowered at the time, and, you know, there was just a bunch of other BS that was going on. So I'm actually going to be a little optimistic and see how Milka Duno does in the Nationwide series.
I disagree with this. Put Kenny Wallace in that car. I mean, Milka Duno, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, she has, I think, 3 majors and other stuff, but there's more other drivers much more deserving for that car. You know, she's done pretty much absolutely nothing in the ARCA Racing Series. I mean, given that she does have 3 top tens, but her best finish in IndyCar was in 11th at Texas Motor Speedway in 2011. And, you know, I mean, put someone else in the car like Kenny Wallace who deserves it. You know, I disagree with this decision. I mean, it's cool that she's going to become the first Hispanic driver to race in NASCAR, but, you know, I think, you know, Kenny or someone else deserved to ride much more than she does. But that's my thought, so. All right, anything else on that before we move on? Okay. Our next topic is Marcus Ambrose to run the NASCAR Nation F Series race at Watkins Glen this weekend in the number 09 Stanley Ford, and the pit crew from the Sprint Cup Series with Marcus Ambrose will also be pulling double duty the weekend. And they announced during the release that Scott McDougall, I think I'm saying that right, I'm probably not though, will serve as the crew chief on Saturday. And I'm going to start with Glenn this time for his thoughts on Ambrose joining the Nationwide Series this weekend.
I think it's great because Ambrose has done the double before, and I do remember him sweeping both races here. And I think he's going to do really good. I mean, this track, I'm afraid to say this, but Watkins Glen is sort of like a V8 supercar track. It's the perfect way with the elevation changes, a bus stop, and a couple of tight chicanes. This is in Ambrose's wheelhouse for sure.
Joseph.
Joseph?
He dropped out on us, actually. So, anyway, we'll go ahead and preview the Zippo 200 at the Glen. This is the 20th annual race there. Some of the few driver changes / notables this weekend include Marcus Ambrose, as we just mentioned, number 09, Joe Logano will drive the number 12 in a second car for Penske Racing. Matt Kenseth will join the number 20 car this weekend for Joggers Racing. Brad Keselowski will drive the number 22 once again this weekend for the second weekend in a row. Kevin O'Connor will drive the number 23. Chris Cook will be entered in the number 24 car. Tom Menard will be back in action in number 33. Kyle Larson will be back in the number 42. Carlos Contreras will drive the number 44. Brendan Newberry will drive the number 55 car, as Kenny Hobble will drive the number 75. The number 74 car will be driven by Roger Ruth. And Tommy Drissi will be back in the series driving the number 93. There are 41 cars on the entry list, which means one car will go home in qualifying, provided that nobody withdraws between here and the race. So, going to be a fun weekend this weekend at Watkins Glen, and should be interesting to follow. All right, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series was in action at the Pocono Raceway for the 41st annual GoBo and .com 400 on Sunday, August 3rd, which was the day of my birthday. Dale Earnhardt Jr. captures his third career win and does the Pocono sweep by only leading 14 laps and led a total of one time only. Finishing in second was Kevin Harvick, third Joey Logano, fourth Clint Boyer, fifth Greg Biffle, sixth Jeff Gordon, seventh Jamie McMurray, eighth is Ryan Newman, ninth is Benny Hamlin, and tenth Casey Kane. Finishing 11th was Kyle Larson, 12th Casey Mears, 13th Kurt Busch, 14th Marcus Ambrose, 15th Austin Dillon, 16th Justin Allgaier, 17th David Gilliam, 18th Ricky Stenhouse Jr., 19th David Reagan, and 20th was Ryan Truex. Finishing 21st was Cole Whitt, 22nd Michael Annette, 23rd Brad Keselowski, 24th Josh Wise, 25th Travis Kaufel, 26th Dave Blaney, 27th Reed Sorensen, 28th Alex Kennedy, 29th Carl Edwards, and 30th was Danica Patrick. 31st was Alex Bowman, 32nd Martin Truex Jr., 33rd Paul Menard, 34th A.J. Allmendinger, 35th Eric Amarola, 36th Tony Stewart, 37th Ryan Vickers, 38th Matt Kenseth, 39th Jimmy Johnson, and 40th was Joe Nemechek. 41st was Landon Castle, 42nd Kyle Busch, and 43rd was John Sauter. The race lasted 3 hours, 8 minutes, and 22 seconds. The average speed was 127.411 miles per hour. The margin of victory was 0.228 seconds. There was 15 lead changes among 10 different drivers. And let's take a look at your Chase Grid Outlook. Dale Earnhardt Jr. leads with 3 wins. Brad Keselowski is in second. Third, Jimmy Johnson. Fourth, Jeff Gordon. Fifth, Joey Logano. Sixth, Carl Edwards. Seventh, Kevin Harvick. Eighth, Kyle Busch. Ninth, Denny Hamlin. And tenth is Eric Amarola. 11th is Kurt Busch. 12th, Matt Kenseth. 13th, Ryan Newman. 14th, Clint Boyer. 15th, Kyle Larson. And 16th is Greg Biffle. So the very interesting NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race this past weekend at Pocono, and Glenn, what was your thoughts on the race if you watched it or from what you saw it on Twitter?
I didn't really see it, but you know, good for Dale Earnhardt Jr. You know, he won and put a little bit of life in the Pocono in a way. Now he leads the Chase seating right now, and I think this is like the first time he's had like multiple wins since probably 2002 or 2004. I mean, if you're a stats guy, you would probably know, but good job to Dale Jr.
It was certainly a very interesting race, and I think Dale Earnhardt Jr. has certainly been having a fantastic season so far, and You know, he's dead. I really think that it's going to get a couple more wins before the season closes out. You know, he should have had Las Vegas won and then ran out of fuel, you know, so he should have at least 4 wins, but that happened, and he only has 3. So, but I think, man, as I say earlier, I think he's signed up with 3 wins this season. He's signed up with a couple more wins before the season's out. All right, we're going to move on to our Sprintcasters topic. Our first one is, could NASCAR require tire pressure sensors? The last 3 weeks, Jimmy Johnson has found a way to blow a tire, and, you know, bad luck this weekend at Pocono, which I don't think really was a tire issue, is because he hit the wall previously that ESPN failed to show the fans at home. And then later on, he blew a tire. But, Glenn, your thoughts on should NASCAR and Goodyear do that?
You know what? The tire blowout, that's a little suspicious. And also, you know, tough break for Jimmy Johnson. But I'm wondering if Jimmy Johnson is getting some of these races, you know, these hiccups out of the way, because as we know, when it comes to the chase, Jimmy and Chad deliver.
No doubt. And you know, as far as that, you know, I think it might be a good idea. I think NASCAR needs to start regulating tire pressure, because, you know, many teams, it's not worth the extra speed. You know, it's a safety issue. And, you know, sooner or later it's going to happen where a car's going to blow a tire and a driver's going to get seriously injured or something from hitting the wall. So, you know, I think it's time that they regulate that. I know fans might disagree, but, you know, I'd rather have NASCAR do something like that than see a driver injured and or potentially somebody killed because of it, and we don't want that. So, our next topic is this weekend at Watkins Glen. Nelson Piquet Jr. to make NASCAR Sprint Cup Series debate down the number 77 for Randy Humphrey Racing. And this should be interesting. It's Piquet's first time back in NASCAR National Series since Homestead last season, when he drove for Turnstock Motorsports in the NASCAR Nationwide Series. Glenn, your thoughts?
Well, Chase Elliott doing a few Cup Series races next year, I think that's brilliant. It just shows that he's going to, you know, get some more races in the Nationwide Series and then, you know, dip his feet in the Cup Series. I have a feeling that come 2016, that Chase Elliott will probably be in the Cup Series either in one of the Hendrick Motorsports cars, or there could be the possibility, if Junior feels like it, to move his Nationwide Series team up to Cup.
Well, I actually said Nelson Piquet Jr., but that's okay. You know, we'll go ahead and talk about Chase Elliott, too,
right?
Because actually I didn't have that scheduled on here. The first thing first is that Dale Jr. wants to bring his JR Motorsports team in the Sprint Cup Series. Hendrick Motorsports will have to get rid of one car because of four team cap, not tire cap. So they would have to get rid of a car because Hendrick Motorsports already fields 4. They can run Chase Elliott in a 5th car, but it has to be a rookie. But after that, Junior could run a full-time car because Hendrick Motorsports fields 4 of them. And even if Dale Junior drove for Hendrick and ran JR Motorsports, it still would be considered a Hendrick car, just like the Jeff Gordon situation of owning the number 48. So they won't be able to do that. But, you know, I think it's interesting that they're discussing this, and, you know, I think she'll be just fun in the Sprint Cup Series, is what we saw this year in Nationwide Series, and, you know, he's leading the point standings as a rookie, so that's pretty impressive. And he also has, and we didn't mention this earlier, But he also has a 40-point lead in the Sunoco Rookie of the Year points. So.
That's true. That's true. And since I messed up on the Nelson PK deal, I'll go back and say my thoughts for that. It's good to see Nelson PK back in some form of racing, because we used to talk about him a lot in the truck series, and he did pretty well, even got himself a couple of wins. So it'll be interesting to watch how PK goes, and which team is he going to be with?
And, I think it's certainly going to be interesting watching him make his sprint cut series date. And, hopefully he finds a ride somewhere in NASCAR and bringing it back into the sport. All right. The family that was involved with the family member that was killed in Pocono in 2012 in a lightning strike is suing NASCAR and also Pocono Raceway, claiming NASCAR blew off a severe thunderstorm warning in the area at Pocono 400 until the storm got bad. And so this is pretty interesting. Glenn, I'll start with you with your thoughts.
All right. Let's see here. Which topic are we talking about again?
It was about the fan that was killed in Pocono in 2012.
Oh.
The family of the widow is suing NASCAR and Pocono Raceway.
Okay. I'm looking at the same story myself, and I was just kind of scanning back over it. I had a feeling that this would happen. I had a feeling that that the family was going to try and shoot through the track, but also NASCAR. That's an interesting move. I don't know what's going to come out of this. I do not want to say anything that might anger the family or, have them, complain to us or anything like that. But does it say how much that the family is asking for?
It does not.
So, no. Okay, well, it's got to be some type of number there. It's probably a six-digit number, and I am up in the air on if they're going to get that or if they're going to get, something. So we'll see what happens with this, and hopefully we find out the results soon.
And our last topic in NASCAR's Sprint Cup Series before we preview this weekend, Sprint calls off T-Mobile merger and names a new CEO, and that new CEO will be Marcelo Collar. Will take over as president for the largest wireless carrier in the United States, and this could possibly affect the Sprint Cup Series sponsorship after 2016, but I really don't think it will. Glenn, your thoughts?
It definitely sounds like that. This could affect, the Sprint Cup Series. I mean, it's hard to find sponsorship these days, and also, sponsorship that is, got a deep enough pocketbook that they can support, a 43 car series that runs at 36 races per year. I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue, but we'll see what happens as it gets closer.
And, all right, now we're going to preview Watkins Glen this weekend. I think I said Pocono earlier, so if I did, I apologize. There are 43 cars on the entry list, not really many changes that we need to note over here as I go down the entry list. But, we have a couple. Boris Sand will drive the number 32, and number 33 will be driven by Alex Kennedy. And see if there's anything else. John Nemechek will drive the number 66 with Nelson Piquet Jr. on the number 77, as we mentioned earlier. Michael McDowell will drive the number 95, and that's really all the changes on the Cup entry list. So should be a fun weekend at Watkins Glen this weekend.
Oh yeah, I mean Watkins Glen is a really good road course. I mean, it's sort of easier than say Sonoma, but the real problem with this racetrack is that we're definitely going to see a lot of transmission failures, because you know you're going to be shifting going uphill, you're going to be shifting going through the bus stop, and the bus stop has always been a race ender or even a race maker for that matter. There's no sand traps at the racetrack anymore. They made runoff areas. And, of course, hopefully we don't see the big one like we have in past races. Plus, pit strategy is going to be key because this is sort of like an IndyCar race almost. It's a fairly short race, 90 laps. But in those 90 laps, you know, you basically have maybe two, maybe even three opportunities to work on that race car. Primarily, I think a lot of teams will probably try to pull for a two-stop strategy. But I have a feeling that we might end up seeing a three-stop strategy, and I don't think it's going to come down to fuel mileage.
All right. Well, we have 22 minutes and 30 seconds left of our stream, which, again, we apologize that this show started an hour earlier than when it was supposed to. And we thought that it would start at 8, but apparently the change did not take effect. So we are deeply sorry about that. And again, it's probably going to be a very rush in the open world report, but I'm going to turn it over to him for that. And take it away, Glenn.
Yep. Well, you know what? But the report is actually fairly short because we only have the IndyCar Series, as well as the Indy Lights Series. So let's go ahead and go right into the IndyCar Series, and we'll do the Indy Lights thing right after it. So the Verizon IndyCar Series was racing this weekend at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course for the running of the Honda Mid-Ohio 250, or 200, excuse me. And this turned out to be a really interesting race, including the fact that somebody who started second won the race. So let's go ahead and get this race underway because now we've turned it into a time session. Here we go. Green flag is out. Sebastian Bourdais is the race leader. Joseph Newgarden is starting second. They started the race coming out of turn number 5 because that's a suitable front straightaway. They made their way to turn number 6, but not everybody made out of there just fine. Tony Kanaan ends up spinning right in front of the entire field and ends up collecting Marco Andretti. Marco did not have anywhere to go because he ended up getting pushed in by Takuma Sato. An onboard view showed that Kanaan just lost the rear end, and after that, it was all hell from there. So let's go ahead and fast forward a little bit to later on in the race. Bourdais continues to lead with Newgarden second and Ryan Hunter Ray third, and Graham Rahal is starting to stick his snout up there, and so is Juan Pablo Montoya. Pit stops were also key here, as Ryan Hunter-Reay was able to leapfrog Bourdais a couple of times and was able to take over the race lead, but Bourdais pulls off a very gutsy move. Going into turn number 6, Bourdais pulled the outside move, or she pulled to the outside line and made his way around Ryan Hunter-Reay in a very, very, very good move. All right, so let's move ahead a little bit, because then, a little bit later on, trouble for Ryan Hunter-Reay as he ends up spinning out. I believe he spun out at the exit of turn number 8. The car just lost the back end, and he ended up almost hitting the wall, so that would bring everybody to pit road. Now, there's one car that has been moving way up through the field, and that was Scott Dixon. And as a matter of fact, Scott Dixon at this point now has the race lead over Sebastian Bourdais, Carlos Munoz, and Joseph Newgarden. So a couple of young guns, we're going to try and gun for Dixon. Green flag came out, and Joseph Newgarden spent no time trying to get some passes. He almost shoved Graham Rahal into the grass and was given a warning for chopping. So now let's fast forward a little bit as the final pit stop came out. Trouble for Joseph Newgarden's team, as first of all, the air jack didn't work, plus he ran over the air hose and was penalized for that. So that would take him out of the equation. Also a little bit further back of the pack, Will Power and Charlie Kimball battled their way for, I believe, a top 5 finish. And they almost took each other out in a little hard racing, but Will Power got the position. But at the front of the field, there was no stopping Scott Dixon, who took home the checkered flag from last to first, winning the Honda Indy 200. So big win for Scott Dixon, and also apparently he ran out of fuel as well. So thank goodness that, you know, he ran out of fuel just after the checkered flag. So let's save the finishing order and see where your favorite car finished in the next. In the IndyCar race, Scott Dixon was the race winner. Sebastian Bourdais finished second, and Canadian James Hinchcliffe round out the podium position. Carlos Munoz finished fourth. Graham Rahal finished fifth. Will Power finished sixth. Charlie Kimball finished seventh. Eighth was Ryan Briscoe. Ninth, Simon Pagenaud. And rounding out the top ten spots was Ryan Hunter Ray. Juan Pablo Montoya finished 11th. Joseph Newgarden finished 20th. Mike Conway finished, not 20th, 12th. What am I saying? Mike Conway finished 13th. Mikhail Elishan finished 14th. 15th, Justin Wilson. 16th, Jack Hawksworth. 17th, Carlos Huerta. 18th, Takuma Sato. 19th, Elio Castroneves. 20th, Sebastian Saavedra. He ended up falling out of the race on lap 24 due to something mechanical. And then Tony Kanaan and Marco Andretti round out the final spot. They, unfortunately, DNF'd. So good win for Scott Dixon. And so their next race is going to be coming next week when we go to the Milwaukee Mile. Also, the Ultimate Light Series was in action. Jack Harvey won both races, and we have the results from race number one. Jack Harvey won the race. Gabby Chavez finished second, and Luis Razia finished third. Our buddy Zach Veach finished fourth. Matthew Brown finished fifth. Axel Jeffries finished sixth. Zach Mayer finished 7th, Scott Anderson finished 18th, Juan Pedrita finished 9th, while Paulo Garcia was 10th, Jimmy Simpson and Ryan Finley round up the field of 12 cars. A similar thing here, Zach Beach ended up finishing 2nd, Gabby Chavez 3rd, and also one car failed to finish the race, that was Matthew Brabham, because he was involved in a little accident. So that's your look at the IndyCar series. F1 is still off right now. They will be back in action at the end of the month. And as I said, our next race is going to be the Milwaukee Mile on August 17th. And then after that, there's two races left, Sonoma and Fontana. The championship is heating up. Who's it going to be? So back to you, Brett.
All right. Well, I think that's going to conclude our show tonight. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and thank you, Glenn, for coming on as a two only. And I'm going to start with you, Glenn, for your final thoughts.
All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at IndyCarGL2488. You can also friend me on Facebook, find me on YouTube, find me on Pinterest. I'm pretty much anywhere where it's social media and stuff like that. And also... I just wanted to let everybody know that I recently surpassed 1,000 followers, and so after the suspension of my original account, which was MojoFlyGL2048, I finally got back to the four-digit range, and so it's good to be back in the four-digit category. So I'll see everybody on the next show.
All right, and there you can find me on Twitter at NASCAR_Brett, or find me on Facebook at Brett Mayhem. Our next show, hopefully we start it at 8 o'clock. I'm going to make sure that takes effect this week, or next week, I guess I should say. And hopefully we'll have more of a panel on tonight. Kyle was off doing his job for his newspaper, and Joseph was off with a commitment. So it left only Glenn and I, which we kind of did something kind of similar that we did when we were back on Motorsports Nation, which certainly felt like that tonight. So hope everyone enjoyed, and we'll tune in next week. I'm going to try and get a guest on. We haven't had one in a while, so me and Joseph will work on that. But hope everyone has a great evening, and hope they enjoy the safe races this weekend, hopefully, that we'll have, and see you later. Good night, everyone.